Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Absolutely fantastic, Ron. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing super also. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, both the planning that precedes a launch, the launch itself, the missteps and successes of the launch, so that our listeners, the entrepreneurs, can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Tamara Monosoff of MomInvented.com. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Our sponsor today is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing is your one-stop source for all your marketing, sales, and business development needs. We customize and implement a business strategy to help build your business, grow your sales, and encourage your success. Well, Ron, I want to introduce to our audience today Tamara Monosoff. Tamara is the author of the best-selling books, The Mom Inventor's Handbook, Secrets of Millionaire Moms, and co-author of The One-Page Business Plan for Women in Business. She also has a new book, Ron, Your Million-Dollar Dream, Regain Control and Be Your Own Boss. It actually has hit number one on Amazon. It was launched in May of this year. And hit number one in all three business categories, including marketing, entrepreneurship, and home-based businesses. She has appeared on The Today Show, Good Morning America, NBC Nightly News, The View, CNN, and the front page of The Wall Street Journal, and is an expert columnist for Entrepreneur.com. Monosoff lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, Ron. Wow, quite an accomplishment, huh?
Yeah, that's incredible. Welcome to the show, Tamara.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. And how's the weather out there in San Francisco? My wife and I really love it out there. It's nice and cool.
It is a beautiful day. It's a little bit cooler. Of course, you know, when it's 70 degrees, we all have jackets on.
I understand. Okay. Well, could you tell us why did you write the Million Dollar Dream?
I was listening to a lot of different people with all different backgrounds, and what the common theme I was hearing is that people are really struggling right now with what to do for work, and they're questioning what their next steps should be, and whether you have a job right now, or if you don't, or if you want to contribute to your family income, no matter where you are, I found that people are really examining right now what to do next. So I wrote this book to give people resources and information about how to think about their business, plan their business, and start a business, and that they could jump in no matter where they are in the process and get action steps right now to not only build a business but a life that they love.
Well, that sounds cool. I'm definitely going to put that on my list of books to buy, purchase from Amazon and read.
Boy.
Thank you.
You know, Tamara, with the uncertainty of our economy, it's a really good time to start a business, isn't it?
It's really interesting. It is a good time, and I think a lot of people are feeling fearful of, you know, if it makes sense, and I mean, and for a good reason. Everyone's cutting back and really examining their situation, and I would say that it is a good time to start a business. Large companies have laid a lot of people off, and so the issue is that even though they've laid people off, they still have to offer their customers excellent service, and yet they don't have the staff anymore to do that. So this is what I often tell people, is that this is a great time because you can take your skills and experience and offer them directly to these customers, or you can go back to the company as a contractor and offer yourself up to the company and say, listen, I have these skills, and many of the companies are hiring contractors because they don't want to hire employees right now. So it is a good time to start your business and to use what you know to get started right away.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that Microsoft started in a recession. I mean, Microsoft's done kind of well. And I saw a video of Jeff Bezos of Amazon, and he says that a recession is the perfect time to start a business because everybody, all your competitors are hunkered down, you know, kind of frozen. And, you know, if you can get started in a recession, then you'll be, you know, right there on the leading wave when all of a sudden the economy starts turning around and then they start. You've got a head start.
I completely agree with that.
Yep.
Well, in fact, we had a guest on a couple weeks ago and was talking about the economy and how during the 1929 during the Depression, there was a lot of millionaires came out of that deal.
Yeah, that's
well, and as you just mentioned, how the companies have had to hunker down, and when you're starting a business, you're starting leanly, so you don't have a lot of overhead. You just have yourself, oftentimes, and so it puts you at a great advantage.
Yeah. Well, you know, tomorrow, many of us have a great business idea, but you know exactly, how exactly do we start thinking about this great business idea?
Well, I talk about three approaches to entrepreneurship in the book, and it helps you really identify the right business for you. So, for example, these three approaches are do what you know, do what others do, or solve a common everyday problem. We talked a little bit about do what you know. So if you've been laid off or you want to change, this is a great time to look at how you've performed in the past, what you've performed in the past, look at your skills and experience, and then repackage yourself to offer these skills and experience to customers. So, for example, there's a woman in the book named Sally Minier, and she was laid off from Lehman Brothers. She was head of their dining services. So she thought about it, and she realized what she loved to do was bake. And so she created Sweet Sally's Bake Shop, and now her business is booming because she's doing what she knows and she's doing what she loves. So with the second approach, which is do what others do, this is also the ability to look around, see what businesses, whether they're online or brick-and-mortar stores or whatever the business is, and see what attracts you. What do you like? What is interesting to you? And then you can emulate that business and create your own. Also, franchises fall under this in terms of do what others do. So, for example, there's a woman in the book named Kelly Stroud, and she was in law enforcement for 10 years, but what she loved to do is spend time taking care of pets. So on the weekend, she decided that she was going to purchase a franchise called Fetch Pet Care. And because she was so passionate about her work, of course it blossomed, and now she's been able to leave law enforcement entirely, and she has several franchises. And then the third approach, which is solve a common everyday problem, this is where you see a gap in the market. And, is there a product or service that you can offer that's a little bit different, and you're bringing this to market? This is the most risky, usually. And the example of this is when I first started out, I created a product called the TP Saver, which is the toilet paper saver, and it prevents kids from unraveling the toilet paper. And I never intended to invent this product, but I went to my kids were doing it and clogging the toilet, and so I went to the store to purchase the gadget that prevented kids from doing that, and there wasn't anything. And so that's how I came up with the idea. So there was a gap in the market that I stepped into with that product.
That's interesting. I've got twin boys, and when they were young, I made the mistake of putting the toilet paper on so that the outside edge was facing you. And, of course,
what
you only make that mistake once, because they would sit there with their hands and just go boom, 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 and all of a sudden you have an entire roll of toilet paper unrolled on the floor. And you learn very quickly, if you turn the toilet paper around and they do that downward movement, it just kind of goes round and round and nothing happens. And at that particular age, they don't understand that they have to hit it from down to up.
I never thought of that. I didn't know that.
Well, then there's the fascination with actually grabbing it all and wadding it and throwing it into the toilet.
luckily, my boys never did that. I did have one time whenever you hear your children giggling, you know that there's a problem.
And, yes, you do. And you run quickly.
You run very quickly. And so I run in, and there they are sitting on the floor, and they're sitting kind of spread-eagled, where their feet are touching. And in between that little diamond formed by their legs and feet, they had a box of tissue paper. And they would pull one tissue out, and they would giggle. And then they pulled another tissue out, and they would giggle. And there were little tissues everywhere. So I don't know how you stop that problem other than just keeping the tissue box, where they can't reach it.
It's pretty funny to me always how it's those types of things that they're just the regular household products that end up being so much fun. You know, you buy the toys and they have no interest, but then it's the toilet paper and the tissue boxes.
Yeah, yeah, and my boys liked whenever they'd be taking their bath, we had these little seats that we would strap into the tub and sit them in, you know, before they could really hold themselves up. They like for me to go get ice cubes from the refrigerator and the freezer and to put it there, and they would watch the ice cubes melt. And to them, that was just great fun, and I had to go get another ice cube and another ice cube. So.
I do that now.
Okay.
You know, Tamara, one thing you said about your steps 1, 2, and 3, you mentioned that you should do what you know, and that really intrigues me because I totally agree with you. But tell our listeners what you mean by that and how maybe they could figure out what they know, because that's not always as easy as you think.
Well, I think sometimes, like for example, let's say you've been a bookkeeper for another company. Well, why not have your own company and be a bookkeeper and then find clients and contract yourself out? And so if you cut hair for a salon and you're working for somebody else, why not think of a way to either open your own salon or share with someone else or work out of your house or however it works for you, make it possible for you to take those skills and now become your own boss. And so these are the things to think about. It's if you are, you know, when we're working, we're doing something. And so look at what skills you have, whether they're computer skills or a trade, whatever it is, and think about, wow, maybe I could take those skills, and obviously there are people out there that need the service, and now I just need to repackage it so that it's my own business.
Sure, sure. I know that's what I did when I started Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. I was in the large corporate world and always in sales and marketing function. And
right.
It dawned on me one day when I was told I either moved to Fort Worth, Texas from Chicago or be out of a job, I thought, well, maybe I can do this on my own. And now, of course, no one would take me back, so I better keep working.
No, but that is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Tamara, how much money do people need then, do you think, to launch a business? Because I know that's scary to people.
This is a really important question because everyone needs money, and there's a lot of concern and fear around this. And I dedicate a whole chapter in the book about how to find the funding and to find the right kind of funding for you. And everyone's like, what do you mean the right kind of money? Because not all the money is equal. So whether you're first starting out with your savings, friends and family, or if you're going to angel groups, or eventually if you're going to need venture capital, this is all this type of money is different. And so what you need to do is look at yourself. I've created a matrix. And see where you are in this process. So are you starting a lifestyle business and you're putting up a website, you're going to maybe sell products online or your services online, then you might need a smaller amount of startup funds. But let's say you are going to do what Kelly Stroud did and you're going to buy a franchise, then you're going to need some more moderate investment. And then look at the other end of the scale, and let's say you want to create a high-tech business, and you've got a new application for the iPhone, then you may need more significant capital investment. And so you need to know what it is that you're building first and what you're creating, and then at that point you'll be able to know how much money you need and the right kind of money to go after. And inside, of course, they're all different angel investment resources as well as venture capital investments, if that's the route that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a really critical chapter in that book. That's definitely a must read for sure. And a lot of people say, you know, I've come up with this idea for, you know, a new product or a new service, and my mom and dad said they would get it, and my friends said they would get it, but what do we need to do to find out if other people will really buy our products or our services?
This is so important because a lot of people stop after their parents or friends or family or spouse or someone says how great the idea is or a group of people. It is extremely important to go beyond your friends and family to get feedback because your friends and family usually want to be supportive and are trying to be loving and to, you know, give you that confidence to move forward, and that's fabulous. However, when you are creating a new product or service, it's really important to step out to see if there's a market for it. Because I can't tell you how many people have come to me and they have 20,000 units of a product in their garage that they can't sell because they didn't go test it out first to see if people would actually buy it. And so one of the things, if you have a new product that you can do that doesn't cost any money, is to work with your community. Right here at our fingertips, there are opportunities for you to find out if people will buy your products or services. So, for example, let's say you've got a hiking accessory, and there's a hiking club in your area. This would be, or you're part of a hiking club. This would be a great opportunity for you to speak to the director and see if you could talk to the people in the club to give you feedback about the product and if it works, if it doesn't work, what they would change, how much they'd pay for it, and ask all these questions. If you have a product that you think moms will buy, most hospitals have back-to-back mommy groups. Well, those are groups that are great audiences to help you really finely tune your product or services. So it's important to go out there and ask these questions of people that you don't know, and then also to not be defensive or get your feelings hurt if people don't like what you are doing, and instead say, wow, why not? What would you change? And see it as a gift. Every time someone tells me that there's something they don't like about a product, I stop and I listen, because it's usually the most invaluable information that you can take about what they don't like and how they would change it and maybe what materials they would use differently or what services are important to them. And then you take that information and then you can refine your products and services so that they're so much better from the beginning and you've really listened to what the market is telling you.
That's so true, because so often I will just talk to people about things and they get defensive, and you really should learn from the people's comments, whether you like them or not. It's so important.
Yeah. And kind of a follow-up question to Mara is, you've written three books that focus on women and moms. What process did you go through to see if there was going to be a market for your books that were targeting that particular demographic?
Well, it's interesting, because what initially happened for me with the TP Saver, this is now 8 years ago, but when I started with the toilet paper saver, and I had never done this before, I created it in 11 months, and I sent out a free press release into PRWeb.com. Today Show picked it up, and my first time on TV with my product was with Katie Couric. From that, I know it was an incredible experience.
Wow.
I had two little babies, and I was, you know, juggling everything. So essentially what happened is, after I was on the show, and I was on for less than 2 minutes, I had over 500,000 people try and contact me. Now, what was interesting about that was on the website, what was interesting about it is that 95% of them were not interested in buying my TP Saver. What they were interested in is learning how I did it. They wanted to know how they could bring their products to market. You know, what do they do with their idea? And so I couldn't possibly answer all those questions individually. And so I never intended to write books, actually. But the reason why I wrote the Mom Inventor's Handbook is because I had all these people wanting these questions. And so I decided to put it into a book so that people could take it and read it and digest all the information. So I shared my journey, and then I also interviewed other inventors who had brought their products to market, and we also shared challenges and mistakes and all those things incorporated into this book so that people could learn from it. And then it's really gone from there. And with Your Million Dollar Dream, the new one, that book is intended for both men and women. It's really about whether you want to make a change, take a stand for yourself, and start your own business. And it offers resources for you to do that no matter who you are.
Well, that's really something. You know, as you were talking, Tamara, I was thinking about networking and how important it is. And can you tell our audience, you know, ways that you can improve your business and grow your business through connections and the importance of networking?
This is so critical to your business success, and it can be done in all different ways. And I suggest doing a lot of different things and then seeing what works best for you. So if you have a local business, then you're going to want to reach out to your local business groups, like the local Chamber of Commerce or whatever business groups that are in your area that make sense for you and your business. So reach out to them. They often have socials and mixers and ways for you to connect that way. I also suggest joining a national organization that fits with what your business is, because that's a way for you to connect in a whole different way and share all different resources, and other doors open when you reach out on a national level. And then the other way is to get online. I teach you how to use Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn for your business. I can't even express to you how important this is. I have done more business in this last year on Twitter than any other way, and I've made more connections that way, and I've licensed products from women on Twitter. I have received interviews from the media. I've featured entrepreneurs on my website because of that. So I really highly suggest that people get on and put themselves out there. And I know that it may seem overwhelming at first if you're not on, but just to give yourself a couple weeks and you will start to understand how it's all working.
Okay. Well, I know that we're following you and you're following us on Facebook and also on Twitter, and it's so important to do that. But you're right, it can be really overwhelming. How do you handle all the people commenting on Twitter and Facebook, Tamara? Do you have someone on your staff that does it all, or what
no.
do you do?
I do it myself.
Okay.
And I really suggest that you do it yourself, because it's that personal connection that makes mm-hmm. all the difference. I mean, it is amazing, and I think people appreciate it, that it's you speaking rather than a staff member. And so I do go on, and people say, well, I don't have 8 hours a day to do it. Well, don't do 8 hours a day. I log on probably twice a day. So in the morning when I log on to everything, I check my email, I go to Twitter, I go to Facebook, I respond, and then at the end of the day, I'll do it again. So don't feel like it's this huge, overwhelming burden. And in fact, it's for me, I see it as a gift also, because I thought, gosh, you know, who am I going to meet? What interesting
yeah,
people
right.
are out there doing fabulous things? So I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's the attitude you really have to have with it, because there's so many people out there and so many interesting people. And I think of all the people I've met through those different social media avenues and the different networking groups I belong to, and I really have not met anyone that I really dislike. You know, they're just really a lot of fun, and I think it's all attitude.
I agree. And one other thing I'd love to add about networking, I think when sometimes I see this happen over and over again, where people say they go to a local networking event and, you know, a mixer of some sort, and they're disappointed, because they've been giving out their cards and they were racing around trying to just tell people what they did, and then they leave and they don't feel satisfied. I say when you go to these mixers, flip it around. You need to listen. Ask questions about what other people do, and don't worry about trying to tell everybody about what you do, but instead really listen, and then think about what connections you can make for them. What introductions can you make for them? And then after the mixer, make that introduction and don't expect anything in return. Or offer a resource, or, hey, I read this article that might fit into what you're doing. It really shows that you listened, and it makes them think about you when something comes up that would fit into your business.
Yeah, you really can. You can't appear self-serving, and that's what so many people try to do. And listening is so important. I know when I met Ron for the first time back, we were in Miami in early January of this year, and I met Ron, and I just listened to him, and he was telling me about his radio show and the Inventors Club he formed down in Atlanta, and his business and so on. And it was really fascinating, and I wound up, now we're doing a radio show together, and mm-hmm. it's so important just to listen. I also find that, you know, maybe not trying to, if there's 50 people in a room, don't try and talk to all 50. Find a couple, three or four people to focus on, you know?
I agree with you completely, because then you can have a more meaningful conversation, and then you're not racing from person to person and really not getting to know what their needs are.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. yeah, or what they're about.
Yeah, tomorrow.
How do you handle after the networking event tomorrow when, say, you get 5 or 6 business cards from somebody? Tell our listeners what you do next.
So you can follow up with them. Just even if you, at that moment, don't have something meaningful to share with them, like you don't have a resource to share, or you don't have an article to share, it's okay. It's more important just to create that connection. So once you get their business cards, make sure to email them and just say, hey, it was great meeting you. I loved hearing about your business. And that's it. And then as you start coming across things that might be of value to this person, and I'm talking about don't sell them your services. Just think them. And because it really makes a difference. I mean, when people send me an article or something that's pertinent to my business and I haven't asked them for it and I'm not paying them for it, I promise you that when something comes up, I do think of them, and I have hired people as consultants to work with me from just doing that.
Right.
So that, I mean, that's what I suggest. So always follow up and keep track of people and really build a relationship like you would with a friend or family member.
What kind of a database do you use to keep track of all your people or all the people that you meet?
Well, I have, as part of our community, we have an entrepreneur community on our website at Mom Invented, and we use FeedBlitz.
Okay.
So, and FeedBlitz is great. I mean, I use, for personal contacts like that, you can use just Outlook on if you have Microsoft Outlook, if you're using a PC. And that's what I do, is I have a business Outlook folder for if I'm just meeting one-on-one. But if I'm doing, like, if I want to communicate with a lot of people, I use a program called FeedBlitz.
FeedBlitz, okay.
And that's how I send out my blog posts and everything, where it lets everybody know what's happening. But I also keep in mind, don't blast people that you meet unless they sign up for your newsletter or your blog. That's a big no-no. To go from these networking meetings and then plugging them into your big system, I don't recommend doing that. Start out building your relationship first.
Yeah, there's a guy I met at the hardware show, and I had heard of him this year, and I had heard of him before. Huge, huge ego. And he handed me his card, and I gave him mine, and he looked at me and says, "How come I've never heard of you?" And I said, "Well, I guess you just never have." And I think it was like in the morning, the next day, I was in his email blast.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, geez.
Exactly. And then suddenly you feel like you're not being respected when you're just added in without it being your choice. So I think that's a really important point.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, tomorrow, let's talk about business planning. You know, in the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones is asked, you know, what's your plan? And he says, I'm making this up as I go. How will business planning improve our chances for success?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because so many people avoid planning because they have misperceptions about what a plan is. They think it's a financial document. They feel like they don't know the numbers. They get really nervous around planning. And I say it is so important to plan. I have a process called the One-Page Business Plan. It's a method actually started by Jim Horan of the One-Page Business Plan Company. I talk about it at length within this book, and then, of course, we also have a workbook. But a plan, a business plan, it'll help you clarify your goals, your strategies and your action steps, and your business becomes real. It is so exciting when you get it down on paper. Suddenly it's like, my God, this is real. I'm doing this. And you need to ask yourself the following questions. At the very beginning, what am I building? What am I building? What is this that I'm creating? Who am I in service of? I think it's really important that you know who you are serving. And what is the promise that I'm making to my customers and clients, as well as to myself? So know what your heart connection is to your business and what your promise is to people. And then you come up with your objectives and strategies and action plans to achieve your goals. So I see this one-page plan as a more of a personal planning document. It's a business plan, but it's really about you, your business, and it's about what you're seeking to achieve, as opposed to a big financial document, which you will have to have down the road if you get investors. But for just a starting point, this is just a phenomenal way just to get your ideas down and start to get to put down your objectives and strategies, and you'll be amazed by how you can create a launching pad for yourself. so that you can get started right away.
Is there information for that one-page business plan on your website tomorrow?
If you look under books on my website, you can see the one-page business plan. The one-page business plan is a workbook. And then in your million-dollar dream, I write out the steps in the last chapter about business planning. And so you can either way, but the one-page business plan is an actual workbook. What I love about it is that the workbook piece of it is that it asks you prompting questions. So you're not just left looking at a blank page, starting to sweat. Instead, there are questions to prompt you through the whole process so that you have success in writing your plan.
Okay. Well, tomorrow, what is your website, and how can our listeners get in touch with you?
MomInvented.com. And you can sign up to receive our updates, which are sent out. There are inspiration as well as information. And I really believe in that combination, that we all need to be inspired, but we also need specific how-to information. And so you can sign up for our newsletter. We have a members area. It's free at members.mominventors.com. But you could just go to Mom Invented, and everything is right there.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Tamara. Our listeners have gotten some really great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their launch and journey.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here today.
Okay. Well, another great show, Bill.
Gosh, Ron, it really was. And tomorrow, I really appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thank you so much.
Well, I also want to give a special thanks today, Ron, to our sponsor, Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. We go the extra step so you don't have to fret. Visit our website at www.entrepreneursales.com.
And tune in each week at this same time to listen live, or you can go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry signing off with another great session of The Launch Hour.